Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know us, we're your friendly HR analytics dashboard that helps you bring all of your people data from all your different systems in one place. That's right. Tired of pulling messy spreadsheets from your HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance systems, employer brand, blah, 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 and trying to turn that into some type of messy HR spreadsheet dashboard? Well, no longer do you have to do that because you can use our dashboard that has API connectors to all of those systems to pull all your data from all those different areas of HR into one real-time, streamlined, centralized HR dashboard so that you can view, track, share, and analyze all your people data from one place. But that's enough about Employee Cycle because today we have a very special guest. And so I hope that all of you help me welcome to the podcast Fiona Jameson, CEO of Spring International. And today our topic is people analytics real or just hype? Fiona, welcome to the podcast. Woo! Fiona!
Hi, Bruce. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Thanks for being on the podcast as well. Plus, you know, I wish I had a very fancy accent as well, because we both could make the podcast sound very sophisticated.
But there you go. I'm
glad you're on here because you get to make me sound even more sophisticated, which I know can be difficult. But with that being said, Fiona, I want to start off our interview today with the question that I always ask, which is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
That's a great question. So my background is in management research, and that's the area I was working in back in the UK. Then when I moved to the United States, very long ago, it seems now, I started working social research and then eventually moved into employee research. And so it's a real passion of mine. I love getting down and dirty with the data and really helping companies become better places to work based on the kinds of data that they can leverage from their employees.
Awesome. And then can you also give us a brief summary of what you and your company Spring International does?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a boutique firm. We're based just outside Philadelphia, and we really focus on employee engagement and people analytics. We've been in business for about 28 years, and our kind of philosophy is we believe that your company succeeds when everybody has a great day at work. So a lot of the tools that we use leverage employee feedback and voice in order to provide insights back to those companies so they can become better, stronger places to work.
Got it. So today our topic is around people analytics being real or just hype. So in order for us to really discuss that, I would first love if you could help me and our audience really understand what is people analytics.
That's a great question. So people analytics is really taking information, whether that's data from your HRIS systems or out of your employee surveys, your employee feedback tools, and not just delivering on metrics, so not just how much, how many people are we losing or who are we losing, but really using that data to inform insights. So where are the best recruiting sources? How engaged are our employees and why? Why are our employees leaving and what can we do to retain them? So it's looking beyond the metrics and the numbers to really understanding the why behind the data and using that information to inform not just HR decisions, but business decisions. And that really involves, you know, a number of things, but it's really using data to generate insights that can inform business decisions.
Got it. So now let's go into our exciting topic around whether people analytics is real or just hype. And I'm sure that you have a lot of insight and context around this since you're helping companies with their people analytics strategy. So let's kick off this interview with, where are we in regards to people analytics being something that companies are really getting value from and that people actually know what they're doing versus it just being a hype buzzword like machine learning or AI?
So it's interesting that one of the quotes that you may have heard out there is that big data and analytics is a bit like teenage sex, that everyone thinks everyone else is doing it. Everybody's saying they're doing it, but in reality, not a lot of people are really doing it. And so,
I must say that is probably the best quote that has ever been said on the podcast. You win that award.
Well, I'm actually quoting someone else. So, you know, we'll find out who that is and make sure they get credit for it. But I think that's often the case, is that a lot of companies want to do it, but they don't really realize what it takes in order to do analytics well. And I would say about 40% of organizations today are still sitting in a very reactive situation where, you know, somebody says, how many or how much are we doing in this? You know, how many people are we losing, or how many people have we hired this year? But they're not really proactively thinking about strategic analytics, which is, you know, how many people are we going to need, and why are we losing the people that we want to lose, and how engaged are our employees, and how is that impacting our business performance? So, you know, about 40% of organizations are still just doing reporting. They're still just pulling the numbers and reporting them out in scorecards. On the other end of the spectrum, there's probably about 10% of organizations, typically those out in Silicon Valley, typically much more technical financial organizations, who are doing more advanced analytics. They're starting to do scenario planning. They're starting to do advanced analytics where they're connecting the metrics from the different parts of their organization. Most companies sort of fall somewhere in the middle, and they're really starting. There's a strong interest in the last couple of years to start building internal people analytics teams or human capital teams that are helping them to make more informed data-based decisions for their company versus, I think it's a good idea to hire this new group of people, to it makes, we have the evidence suggests that this is the way the market's going and where we should invest. So it's in progress. I think a lot of companies have got quite a way to go, but there's definitely the amount of increase has been increasing over the last few years.
I really appreciate the distinction that you made around people analytics, not just showing the data or reporting, but really taking metrics from not only disparate HR data sets, but also metrics outside of HR, like finance data, because we're constantly being asked, where do we fall as a product? Mm-hmm. Are we a people analytics dashboard? And I've had the conversation with customers, partners, and investors that at this point, and our target market is companies under 1,000 employees. And so for us, we know that most companies on their data journey are in the crawl stage where they're not necessarily ready for people analytics, which is why we're specifically and strategically positioned as an HR analytics dashboard. But as you get into people analytics, where you start to become more sophisticated, do you have to be a company at a certain size? Do you have to have a certain amount of data? Where should companies and how should companies start thinking about themselves as being ready and positioned to start actually implementing a people analytics strategy?
I think that companies, once you get to about 100 employees, you're starting to generate the kind of information that can help you make more strategic decisions. Below that, you probably don't have enough data or information. But once you reach about 100 employees, you're starting to generate employee feedback. You're starting to see patterns in the data that you have. You're starting to be able to look at different functions differently or different work groups in different ways. And so I think once you get to that size, it's where you can really start building a people analytics strategy. That said, I think that one of the first steps, the very first step is understanding your business strategy and what kinds of people analytics decisions are we going to need to make? So how do I align the kinds of insights I'm going to generate to the business strategy? But the very next step is pulling all that data into one place, which is why tools like yours, I think, are really valuable, because they're starting to make sure that that data that they have that may be siloed around the organization can be pulled into one central location, and you can start to run analysis from it. And that takes time. I mean, one of the biggest challenges we see when we start companies down the path of people analytics is their data is owned by different data owners in different systems, with different levels of qualities ranging from well, you know, Joe puts this data in a spreadsheet over here and then emails it over there to, you know, we have a database on an older system to, you know, we've got a web-based platform, and it varies. Those data sets don't often speak to one another. So that's kind of step two, right, is starting to get that data into one place so you can start asking questions of the data that can inform your business decisions.
That's great. And you're right. What we're seeing as a product is that most companies are just looking to put the data in one place. And then eventually we're looking to catch up to the capabilities that you're talking about in regards to more advanced analytics around people analytics. But you actually provided me a great segue into the next part of the interview, which is creating an actionable plan for all the HR and people ops leaders out there to be able to first figure out how and when to create a people analytics strategy, then from there, actually execute on it and understand what are the skill sets, people, time, data, all the variables that's needed to be able to pull this off successfully. And then lastly, figure out how to actually measure the success of the actual people analytics strategy in the first place. Mm-hmm. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's start off with how and when is the right time to actually create a people analytics strategy, and what does that strategy look like?
So we usually see companies starting down their people analytics journey when they have a big business question to answer. So maybe it's we're suddenly growing and we're going into new markets, and we need to understand how do we leverage the success we've had in our original market into our new market. Or maybe they're going through downsizing and they want to understand, you know, where are their most productive units and how are they going to retain the best. So there's usually some business trigger that leads them down the path of people analytics. And I think the most common we see is around growth. You know, we're expanding, we're opening more stores or more facilities, we're looking to add locations to our business strategy. And when that's the case, they want to make more informed decisions, not just gut-based decisions about where we're going to do it and how we're going to do it, but who are we going to need, what kind of data do we have to understand our existing employees, and how can we leverage that to make the right decisions. So that's usually when, is when there's some bigger business strategy that's requiring information or insights.
When it comes to really figuring out what that bigger business question is, can that be done within the HR silo? Meaning, can the HR or people leader figure out what this business problem is from their vantage point? Do they need to sit at the table with the other business leaders and ask them what are the bigger business issues, and then try to reverse engineer that into how you can solve those with people analytics? What does that process look like?
So usually the way we work, and we act almost like an ad hoc research department when we work with an organization. And the way we recommend is that you start with a number of executive interviews and you talk to them and find out, you know, what's on your short-term strategy, what's on your long-term strategy, what kinds of decisions are you going to need to make in your part of the business, whether that be marketing, finance, operations, business development, and you talk to each of the executives in each of those realms. Once you have that information, you can see where there's overlap, you can see where there's alignment. Sometimes you identify where there's a lack of alignment. But once you have that framework, that blueprint of where the organization's going, the next step is to really understand what data do you currently have in the organization. And that requires talking to a different group of people. It requires talking to the data owners, the people in the organization that are probably sitting in a dark room with a database somewhere, collecting all this information and generating reports, understanding what information they have. And then you can line up the two. You can say, we have this business decision we need to make. Here's the kind of data that we have. It also helps you identify what data you don't have and where there may be gaps in the data that you're collecting today. So that sort of business question data mapping process, we typically call it blueprinting, allows you to identify where the biggest opportunities are. The other part about having a good people analytics strategy is making sure that the analytics and the insights you're generating are really aligned to what the executives care about. Because you could go down a path in HR of, let's say, predicting turnover, for example, that may not be of any interest in the minds of the executives if they're focused on, let's say, growth in international markets, for example. So, you know, you need to be, and you'll have a more sustainable plan if you're aligned with what the company is trying to achieve.
You just hit on the word predictive, analytics around turnover. Does a people analytics strategy have to include predictive analytics, or can it also include prescriptive analytics? What does that need to look like?
I think it can include all of the above. Most organizations, when they get more sophisticated, are trying to predict or at least understand from past patterns what might happen. But I think it can be prescriptive as well. I mean, I think you can learn a lot from just understanding the data that you have. For example, we just looked at some data for a client around diversity and inclusion and understanding within their organization how diverse they are, at what levels in the organization, at what salary levels, in what functions, and where as an organization they need to focus in terms of their talent pipeline to build diversity. That's not predictive, but it's telling you an awful lot about how the organization can become more effective by including and growing the diversity and how included people feel, and you know, bringing innovation and new thinking to the organization by growing that diversity. So I don't think it has to be predictive. I think you can learn an awful lot from just understanding the data you already have.
And then lastly, for creating the strategy, how as an HR people leader should I think about figuring out if I have the skill set to be able to pull this off, or if I need to pull in someone else? And if so, how should I be thinking about that based off of my company size or industry? I'm sure it could be contract. Do I pull in an analyst internally that doesn't have HR background or context, but that might work? Do I need somebody with HR context? What does all that look like?
That's a great question. So I do think if you're thinking, I want to build this function out within my organization, there's usually about four roles that you need to make this happen. The first is a data architect or data scientist. That's the person who you may have on staff somewhere in your IT group who knows how to put data together. There's someone who's going to build that centralized infrastructure of data. So that data scientist is critical. That's, you don't have to be as an HR leader. You don't have to be a data scientist, right? I think you also need a workforce scientist. That's someone who can run your analytics, run the statistics and metrics as an HR leader as well. I don't think that necessarily has to be you. I think you need to understand at a basic level what analysis is. You know, what is a correlation? You know, what does that mean and what does that tell me? But you don't need to have to run it yourself. I think you can, that's a role you can hire into. I do think having a workforce behavior expert, some kind of IO psychologist who can make sure that you're measuring the right things, especially when you're capturing employee attitudinal data. Are you measuring, you know, the right attitudes and behaviors? And a workforce, like an IO psychologist, can really help you do that. Many HR leaders have that background, so that could already be on your staff somewhere. I think the critical role for an HR leader to take is you need to understand those other roles and be able to comprehend the kinds of information they're going to generate. But the strongest role that you can take on as an HR leader is being an interpreter or translator. This is someone who can translate that information to the leadership team, communicate insights, and help them make the informed decisions. The best people analytics HR leader is going to be able to influence action and manage change. They're going to be the people who say, hey, we ran all this analysis and these are the three things we found, and this is how it should influence decisions and the actions we take in the next 3 months, and facilitate that discussion. Because you could have all of this data, all of this analytics, all of these insights, but unless you're able to communicate it to the business leaders and in such a way that is both inspiring and insightful, it's all going to be pointless. So I think the best role an HR leader can take on is getting comfortable with analytics, but really taking on that role of interpreter or translator of the insights that get generated.
That was great. And so now we're at the part where I've created my strategy thanks to Fiona, and I understand what to assess and who to include. And now it's time to actually execute on this strategy. So what does this look like? Am I looking at data to look at the quality and integrity of the data? Do I need to have a full written out plan for me to get started? What's the best way for me now to execute on this strategy?
Let's assume that your data architects and scientists have got your data to a good quality place. And you have a question that the executives have asked, like, you know, where's the best recruiting source for us as an organization that generates the most productive employees, for example. Start with a pilot project, run some analysis, generate one or two insights, and go through the entire process where you have to communicate it, make a decision based on it, take action. Take it a bite at a time. If you run out and run all this analysis, you're going to overwhelm everybody. No one's, and they're going to be too overwhelmed by the information to be able to take action. So run a pilot project, start small, generate some insights, communicate them, take action based on them, and then rinse and repeat and build each time maybe the level of data you're using, the complexity of the data that you're using. But you really need to demonstrate the entire process from the question, building the evidence, generating the insight, making a recommendation, and taking action. If you can follow that sort of feedback loop, then I think people see the power of analytics and how it can inform business decisions. But start small, you know, keep it simple and start small. That's always the way to build a sustainable analytics group in my mind.
And when it comes to actually looking at the data, are there best practices that I should follow as I'm implementing this strategy? So best practices around if I'm looking at trend data, how far I should be looking back, or if there's not enough data points in a certain area, then I could maybe assume that this might not be statistically relevant. Are there any things that I should be looking out or best practices and blind spots that I might have if I'm new to this to make sure that I'm actually implementing a strategy that is leveraging the data in the best way, but also accurately as well?
Yeah, there's a couple of things I would at least keep top of mind. One is the smaller your sample, the smaller the group that you're looking at, the more it takes for the change to be significant. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can see a big shift in numbers with just one or two people's perceptions changing. And sometimes that can be misinterpreted. So you really have to be careful when you're looking at small group sizes that you're not overinflating a result. So that's one thing. Anytime you're looking at trend data, I mean, you obviously need at least three data points really to start seeing a trend. That's something else to look at. If your business is very cyclical, you want to probably collect data for, you know, a year and a half at least to start seeing consistent patterns over time. You know, that's specifically important in industries like retail or seasonal kinds of manufacturing organizations. That's key to think about. And then one of the things that you mentioned earlier that I didn't respond to, but I think is critical, is that in HR, I think we're very careful with what data represents. We know that when we start looking at small groups, individuals might get identified and it would break down confidentiality. And so we know the power of that information, and confidentiality is really key, especially when you're talking about employee feedback. If you start sharing individual level comments or data, then employees are going to shut down and not continue to share information. So be very aware of, you know, not releasing confidential information as you're doing analysis. And what I've seen over time is sometimes, you know, when you just have like a data scientist who's just running numbers, they tend to forget what those numbers represent. And in HR, those numbers represent people's lives, their jobs, you know, their roles, their development, all kinds of things. And so making sure that you keep your reports aggregated when you're generating insights, I think is a really critical thing to think about. And as anybody who's a geek like me, Spider-Man's uncle, what was he? Peter Parker's uncle once said, with great power comes great responsibility. And I always think of that quote when I think about data scientists who have access to all of this incredibly powerful information. You have to be very careful about who you're releasing it to and how it's being used and the transparency in how you're using that data.
Fiona, you were on fire with the quotes today.
I'm just a geek. A proud geek.
And so lastly, let's talk about measuring the success of this people analytics strategy. And I'm assuming part of it is actually measuring it by knowing that you actually have gained insights, but then also part of it is by measuring how well you were able to tell a story. And maybe there's some other things too. There's some other goals that you should be looking to achieve with your people analytics strategy. But overall, if we've come out with a great strategy and we've executed in the way that you've given us this blueprint, then how are we measuring the overall success or ROI of this program?
I mean, I think ultimately success comes from behavior change. If people take action and change what they're doing as a function of the insight that you've generated, then you've ultimately impacted the organization. And I think that's what success is. So maybe your insights generate, let's focus on turnover for a minute. If we identify the top three reasons why people are leaving, and we change people's employee experience so that they're no longer leaving for those reasons, That's the impact of people analytics, right? So behavior change has to happen as a function of the insight that you generated. Maybe you identify your best recruiting source. You focus more of your resources on that one source. Maybe you identify the connection between employee engagement and customer satisfaction. And so you invest more in training your leaders how to better manage employee engagement. You see that increase and you see customer satisfaction increase. So I think you really need to focus to see success and measure success. I think you have to look at the behavior change that happens as a function of the insights that you've generated. And that's where you're going to see the ROI of spending time on generating insights.
So to bring it full circle, is people analytics real or is it just hype?
Absolutely, but not as many people are doing it as say that they're doing it. And they're not maybe as good as it as they'd like to be. So I think we're on a journey. I think that it's real and that it's generating insights for a lot of companies. I'd just like to see more people doing it and doing it well.
Nice. So now let's move to my favorite part of the episode. I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The real question. Do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I am a massive fan of bread pudding. My mum makes the best bread pudding in the world. And so that's one of my favorite desserts.
That is awesome. And so earlier this year, my wife and I, we actually were on our way to France and we had a layover at Heathrow. And we weren't supposed to stay there, but the airport, it's almost ridiculous to catch a connecting flight from there. Mm-hmm. So much going on.
It's a big airport.
And so we had about 4 or 5 hours to hang out in Paddington. And I did not get bread pudding. And I'm so upset. I didn't even think about it.
Did you see the bear? Because you hung out in Paddington. Did you get to see the bear at least?
Yes. Yes.
It's a bronze statue in the corner, I think.
Yeah. Okay, so the random question. Are you an iPhone or an Android person?
I am an iPhone person. I always have been. Not by design. I think I just happened to get one years ago and I just stuck with it. As much as I love to see behavior change, I am a creature of habit. So once I have something that works well for me, I keep it.
True loyalist. I like it.
That's right.
And then the ridiculous question. What is the most ridiculous perception of people analytics that you believe you've heard or seen today that you wish would change or that you hope changes in the future?
I don't know whether it's ridiculous or not, but I often get asked when we do the kinds of analysis that we do and we identify issues in an organization and it's based on employee feedback. If I had a dollar for every time I'd been asked, hey, why don't you just tell me who those people are so I can, you know, do X, Y, or Z. I'm always like, why would you do that? We told you this is confidential. We told you that's not how to utilize data, but there's just this human instinct to want to fix things. So I don't know whether that's ridiculous, but it's definitely a frustration point for me. I want people to look at the bigger picture, make more informed strategic change. And so I think the focus on the individual sometimes frustrates me a little bit.
No, that counts. And that was a great answer. Well, Fiona, you have been such an amazing Employee Cycle podcast guest. So I just want to say thank you, Fiona. You're awesome. So where can people find you and Spring International online?
Well, we have a website, obviously. It is springitl.com. And anybody can click on that website. And we have an information mailbox. They can email us, which is info@springitl.com. And we'd be more than happy to get on the phone and chat with anybody who's interested in what we do and how we do it. We'd love to expand our client base.
Awesome. And thanks again for being such a great guest. Hey, all you listeners out there, if you've enjoyed this interview as much as I have and enjoyed this conversation that's both educational and entertaining, then please leave us a 5-star rating because it shows that we're creating great content and that's why we're doing it. We're doing it for you. Also, if you found this episode because you're already a super fan of Fiona or you're so interested in people analytics that you had to listen, but now you're interested in more topics because you think that, sure, this sounds like a great podcast, then we would love to have you as a subscriber. So please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to great podcasts. And last but not least, all of you HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.